What to do if food logs are causing you stress? What testing to get done if you're suspecting candida? And how to do an elimination diet the right way? That's what board-certified integrative and functional nutritionist Erin Holt is going to be talking about with me on today's podcast. Stay tuned. So here's the big question. How do you heal your eczema for good? How do you get to the point where you're comfortable in your own skin and aren't embarrassed to show it off? How do you stop using creams and medications that only work for a short while and find a long-term solution? That is the question, and this podcast will give you the answer. My name is Jocelyn Diaz, and welcome to the Eczema Free Journey Podcast. Hey guys, Jocelyn jumping in here again. I wanted to let you know that today's episode is sponsored by Audible. If you haven't heard of Audible, it's the easiest way to listen to audiobooks. If you don't have Audible currently, you can get a free audiobook today and a 30-day free trial to Audible as well. If you don't like it, you can cancel before the 30 days are up and you still get to keep the book, which is what I love. They don't just take it away from you. They have so many titles, including several of the medical medium's books, including his newest one, Cleanse to Heal. So the audiobooks are amazing for busy moms. We're constantly on the move, right? Well, with Audible, you don't have to sit down and read a book. You can be driving, moving, bathing the kids, taking a shower, exercising. You can pretty much be doing it all as us moms normally do. Another great thing about Audible is the ability to listen across several devices without losing your spot. I don't know about you, but I hate when I lose my spot in a book. And with Audible, you don't gotta worry about that. Get your free audiobook and start your free 30-day Audible trial by going to audibletrial.com/eczema-free. Once again, that's audibletrial.com/eczema-free. Alrighty, hope you enjoyed today's episode. We're about to jump into today's podcast, but before we do, I wanted to share something with you. If you're looking to get your child eating better, I have something to help and it is completely free. After struggling for way too long trying to get my two kids under 4 years old to eat more fruits and veggies, I finally discovered 8 key ways to improve their eating and I wanted to give it to you. Why? Because I know the struggle and I don't want you to have to go through that any longer. So I am sharing something that I've tested myself. These methods are what has worked for me. They're surprisingly simple and effective, which is why I thought you could really benefit from it. If this sounds like something you'd be interested in, download your copy now at theeczemafreejourney.com/e. That's theeczemafreejourney.com/eat. All right, now that that's off my chest, let's get to that podcast I told you about. Hello, Healing Nation, and welcome to the Eczema Free Journey Podcast. My name is Jocelyn, and today I am talking with board-certified integrative and functional nutritionist with a feisty attitude and over a decade of clinical experience, Erin Holt. Erin blends evidence-based practices, functional lab testing, energy medicine, boundary setting, and humor for a unique and customized approach to women's health. She dives deep with women to get to the root cause of their issues and finally get answers to their mysterious symptoms. You can find Erin on her weekly show, The Functional Nutrition Podcast. And today we're going to be talking about why restrictive diets don't work well for eczema, as well as what we need to know about candida and how it relates to eczema. Welcome, Erin, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited to chat with you. I have so many questions, but before we get started, I like to loosen it up and have some fun. And the first question I like to ask is, what's one fun fact about you that no one really knows about?
Okay. So a lot of folks know that I'm a huge hip hop head. I talk about Wu-Tang all of the time. So like, it's very infused into my brand and my business. I love 90s hip hop. But what people I don't think know is that I also love the Grateful Dead because I kind of grew up listening to that. So, I'm a little bit hippie, a little bit hip hop.
I love it. To be honest, I've heard of Wu-Tang Clan, but I listen to music, but I don't actually know about music. Like, I'm not very familiar with like names and groups and things like that. My husband makes fun of me all the time because he loves music. Like, he's really into it. He probably knows exactly who you're talking about, but I'm just like, it's nice.
We are big into music in my household and in our families as well. So
That's great. That's great. Put on music and I will jam with you. I will dance, but don't ask me the name because I will have no clue.
Okay. Fair enough.
That's so awesome though. I love that that's kind of integrated with your brands and everything. That's just something that you enjoy.
Yeah, it can't not be. I mean, I think of things in terms, like every blog I've ever written has like some weird 90s hip hop obscure quote infused into it. It's just like how my brain operates, how I think about it. I can't really separate myself from the work that I do. There's a lot of Erin baked into everything I produce.
Very cool. I love that though. That just, you know, that's who you are. That's what you enjoy. And I think people can relate to that.
Yeah. With me, you kind of, you get what you get and you don't get upset.
Oh, that's awesome, Erin. I love it. I love it. Alrighty. So now we could jump into the nitty gritty of it. So with eczema, a lot of people go toward the restrictive diet route, right? Like we're told eliminate these things and your eczema is going to get better. But I would like to know from your experience, do restrictive diets work well with eczema?
I think it depends on what you mean by restriction and how you're looking at that, because we know based on the literature, we know that the two biggest driving factors for eczema are gut dysbiosis. So meaning an imbalance, the good critters in the not so good critters in our gut, right? But we also know that food sensitivities are a massive contributor too. Specifically, dairy and gluten seem to be two of the biggest contributors, right? So if somebody's trialing a gluten-free, dairy-free diet, I think that's actually a really smart bet for eczema. Gliadin, one of the peptides within gluten, can be very, very pro-inflammatory in the body. And same thing with casein in dairy, depending on the person. But we know that those are two big food antigens, meaning they cause a ruckus with the immune system and cause a lot of inflammation in the body. And with eczema, it's kind of like a system-wide inflammatory disorder, right? So that I think is pretty cool, pretty kosher. Go for it. What I tend to see in my practice by the time somebody gets to me is that they've removed a lot more foods than just gluten and dairy. So maybe they're doing something like an AIP, an autoimmune protocol, where they've taken out gluten and dairy, but they've also taken out all grains. They've taken out eggs. They've taken out nuts. They've taken out seeds. They've taken out nightshades. They've taken out spices, so on and so forth. And so by the time they get to me, they're like, oh dear, like I can't really eat anything. And what this tends to do, first of all, those type of therapeutic elimination style diets were really created for short-term intervention, not long-term, open-ended, just stay on this forever and ever. But that's where I see a lot of folks with eczema kind of struggling, especially if they've gone down the rabbit hole of the internet in research, right? And what can happen with that is, one, it actually restricts food sources from the good bacteria in our gut, right? So we don't have the appropriate fuel for those good critters. So it can actually lead to more dysbiosis. The other thing is that you cannot out-diet a pathogen. So if there is pathogenic bacteria or fungal overgrowths living in the gut, restricting your diet, taking foods away, is not going to heal that up. I think that's a really big misunderstanding. So you are pulling these foods away. We're removing the food source for good bacteria, like the bifido species that do so much for us. And we're not really addressing the root of the issue, which might be a pathogen, a gut pathogen. And so we keep going. And then over time, I see this create a lot of mental struggle too, an emotional struggle, because it creates all of this food fear where people are like, oh my gosh, I don't, you know, I'm trying to add this food back in and I think I'm reacting, but I'm not really sure. I mean, I've been in practice for 10 years and worked with thousands of women, and kind of as a general rule, we're really out of touch with our bodies. So asking somebody to figure out, well, are you reacting to this food or not? That's a big undertaking for a lot of us, especially when we do have that stress and that food fear of like, is this food going to harm me? Because when we eat that food, hey, guess what? Stress can mimic food sensitivity reactions too. So I just find that going kind of whole hog on a really restrictive food plan long-term can actually do more problems or create more problems than solve them.
Interesting. And I like that you mentioned kind of like when you eliminate too many foods, then you kind of run, you feel like you don't have options. And I've heard of an elimination diet, that there's two phases to it. Could you elaborate on that? Do you know what I'm talking about there?
Yeah. And so elimination diets are really the gold standard for food sensitivities. Just to be clear, I'm not knocking elimination diets. I think they're wonderful. So the first phase is you remove the foods. The second phase is that you challenge the system. So it's elimination and then provocation. So you add the food back in, and ideally you're adding one food at a time, and you're waiting 4 days, because most of these food sensitivities are what are known as delayed reaction food sensitivities. So it can take up to 4 days for your body to respond to them. So it's kind of like a wait and see game, and it requires a tremendous amount of patience. But what I tend to see, and where this can go kind of pear-shaped, is that lots of folks with chronic health issues tend to be a bit hypervigilant. So they're always looking for something to go wrong, or they're like, oh my gosh, I got this reaction. What does this mean? And I say this as somebody who does have a good deal of hypervigilance, because I do struggle with my own health issues, or have in the past. It can create a really stressful environment when we do that provocation, because we're not really sure, am I reacting? Am I not reacting? Is this safe? Is this not safe? And that those feelings of lack of safety around food can create a whole other host of problems.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because you described me. And it's one of those things that you mentioned food fear. You get afraid. Is this going to make my eczema flare up? Am I going to be in pain? And you don't know. So do you have any tips for, you know, do logs actually help gain some, you know, so you have a visual? Like, what would you tell someone who is hypervigilant and they're just concerned, like, with everything they eat? What can they do to kind of relieve that stress?
So the first thing, I do think food logs are great, because it gives, and we're also looking, you know, a lot of folks are looking for the GI symptoms, like, oh, I eat the food and then I get the bellyache, and then I know that I have a reaction to the food. But what we know is that food reactions can happen anywhere in the body from top to tail. Maybe it's joint pain, maybe it's brain fog, maybe it's skin stuff, right? It can really happen. And so I think connecting to that idea that these reactions can be very far reaching in the body is important. And I think that's what food logs can help with. What I would say, what I would caution people against, is if the food log becomes more of a stressor than anything else, and this is especially true if you do have history of restriction, whether it's a diagnosed eating disorder or disordered eating in the past, I see a tremendous amount of that in my practice. So this can just create a lot of, if you feel like you're getting locked into that hypervigilance mode, right, where you're that, like, all you're thinking about is the food and whether or not your body's reacting, then I think you'd be a really good candidate for further testing, which may be doing like actual food sensitivity tests, like a really good one. They're not cheap. So I like to start with an elimination style diet before we invest the coin in a like a big test. But I do think that tends to be where I recommend the food sensitivity testing, is when people just feel like they're locked in this food fear, food stress, potentially orthorexia, really scared of food, overthinking it, just everything. They just feel all consumed by the elimination diet.
Interesting. I'm glad you mentioned testing, because I feel like that's one thing that people don't really know where to start. So let's say someone's kind of been on this journey, they've been trying to eliminate things, and they're still stressed, they're still concerned. Where would you tell them to start with the testing? Like, what would be your first step?
So with eczema, what I would really do in terms of functional testing, I would always want to see a comprehensive stool test. And then in terms of food, I'll answer the food sensitivity question first in case somebody's looking for an actual test. The two labs that I really like are Cyrex and vibrant wellness. I do a lot of Zoomers. They're called, there's a wheat Zoomer, there's a dairy Zoomer, there's a lectin Zoomer, there's a corn Zoomer. So it really breaks it down to the peptide level. So that's the one I use in my practice, the vibrant wellness. But then Cyrex is another really great test for food sensitivity testing. I don't really love to use anything other than those two personally.
Interesting. Okay. Awesome. I love to, you know, I feel like that could be like a very overwhelming, just not knowing where to start. So at least those are your two spots.
Yeah. Because like the, let me just jump in because I don't want to forget to say this because I think this is a big thing. Like, so the food sensitivity testing that maybe you can order yourself. I can't think, they're advertised on TV and I cannot think of the name of them, but there's a ton now. What happens, and I've seen this a million times if I've seen it once. Definitely not a million, maybe like 100. that was aggressive. But the test can come back lit up like a Christmas tree where there's so many reactions to foods. And on these type of tests, you really need somebody to help you decipher what that means, because that doesn't necessarily mean that you're reacting to all of those foods for the rest of your life, or these are true sensitivities. It can be more indicative of intestinal hyperpermeability or leaky gut. And so we have to really like take those results with a grain of salt, and understand what could be going on. Versus saying like, oh my gosh, now I have to remove all of these foods for the rest of my life. Cause that can be really overwhelming too.
No, thank you for sharing that. That's definitely something that people might not realize. So get it analyzed properly by someone who actually like knows what the test results mean.
Totally, totally.
Very cool. Awesome. Awesome, Erin. So I also wanted to ask you, so Candida is something that I've heard ever since I started this journey. Could you explain what Candida is and how it relates to eczema?
Totally. Candida is a type of yeast or type of fungus that lives in all of us. We have it. It's part of our microbiome, our gut microbiome, and it's part of other microbiomes too. It's a very opportunistic critter, meaning that if it has the opportunity to take over, it's totally going to seize that opportunity. So we see Candida overgrow in cases where maybe there's a lot of antibiotic use, or there's been an injury to the microbiome. Anytime the good bacteria kind of get suppressed or killed off, the opportunistic bacteria can take over, or the opportunistic yeast can take over. And this is what Candida does. It's really, really scrappy. Once it's taken over, it's like, I'm not going anywhere. It's a very big organism in comparison to other bacteria, and it kind of just takes over. And we do see, at least myself, I see in almost 100 cases, or 100% of my eczema cases, I see a Candida overgrowth. Now, the thing to remember, and if you go ahead and you like Google Candida, you're going to come up with a ton of resources about Candida diets and all the different things that you can do. It's usually eliminate sugar, eliminate carbs. It's usually the big thing. For a really big Candida problem, it's usually not enough to move the needle. The other thing you have to keep in mind is that Candida always comes secondary to something else. So Candida is not going to just overgrow just for the sake of overgrowing. Candida is only going to become a problem when it gets the opportunity. So we have to ask the question, well, what was the thing that allowed the Candida to overgrow? And that's really what we're doing, is kind of like uncovering the root cause, so to speak. What happened in the microbiome? What happened in the gut that allowed Candida to take over? That's what needs to be addressed as well.
Interesting. And is there testing for Candida to be able to confirm it? Or is that just one of those things you got to just figure out yourself?
There is. So the stool test that I run in my practice is called a GI map, and it does look at Candida amongst other yeast species. It can be a little tricky because, like I said, it's scrappy and it goes into hiding. So you don't always pick it up on a stool test, which is a little bit of the tricky thing. So if I do catch it on a stool test, I'm like, oh boy, this is a thing. Other folks like to use the inorganic acids test, because there's a couple of markers, arabinose being one of the biggest ones, that can indicate a fungal overgrowth. So if we see that marker elevated, we know that we're dealing with some candida stuff.
Interesting. Very. I love to kind of hear the science behind all of these testing and all of these things that we hear with eczema, because I feel like it just helps things click a little bit better, help you like, oh, okay. And you start to understand the process of things. So for thank sure. you.
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, Erin. So now we're going to shift to a little fun round, that little lightning round that I love to do on this podcast, where it's kind of just ask you some fun questions and you answer the first thing that comes to mind. Okay.
Sure.
Awesome. All right, Erin. So what is your favorite quote?
Oh, when y'all was asking permission, I just stepped up and took it. That's Mos Def. Told you I like hip hop.
I love it. I love it. Yep. And it comes through, and I feel like it's something that everyone can relate to. So awesome. Alrighty. What about, who is one person that has been most influential to you while on this journey?
Oh my gosh. I don't think I can narrow down one person. But if I had to, Jessica Flanagan is one of my mentors. She is a nutritionist, and she's also been a really close friend of mine as well. She's been awesome. She wrote a book called The Loving Diet, which I highly recommend.
Ooh, okay. Adding that to my list of books. Awesome. Alrighty. What is one common myth about skin health that you would like to debunk?
Ooh, this is a good one, and I have a lot to say about this. Skin health is an inside job. That is the one thing that I want to drive home. Skin health is not, we don't work from the outside in. We have to work from the inside out. So let's talk specifically about eczema. We know that H. pylori is found in 65 to 70% of eczema. We know that low stomach acid is associated with eczema. So we have to address digestion. We have to address any pathogens going on. That is really how we get to the bottom of skin health. It's an inside job. Good gut health equals good skin health.
Love it. And that's what this podcast is all about. So I'm so glad you explained that even better. Got to get to the root cause. No superficial on the top kind of thing. So love it. Alrighty. And last question, Erin, what does healing mean to you?
Ooh, this is, healing is an ongoing journey is what I would say. It isn't a check in the box. It's not a destination, right? It's not like, oh, I've arrived. I have been healed. This is coming from somebody who struggled with disordered eating for 13 years and put that, you know, and recovered from really gnarly eating disorders. And then also somebody who was diagnosed with scleroderma, a pretty intense autoimmune issue, and got that into remission. It is something that I am just always on the journey for. It's just like this perpetual healing journey. And I think that's it's not linear, right? There's a lot, you take a few steps forward and a few steps back. And I want people to understand that is really, really, really normal. You are not failing. There's not something wrong with you. That is what healing looks like.
Thank you so much for mentioning that last part specifically. It's not linear. And I learned that the hard way. And I thought, oh, I'm making, you know, changes. It's just going to go uphill. Mm-mm, not how it works at all. So it's good to know that it's normal, that we're still doing a great job, even if it's, you know, a few steps forward and a few steps back.
Totally. Give yourself some grace throughout the process.
Yes. Yes. Beautifully said. Erin, you have been so amazing. You've answered so many awesome questions. You've been fun. I love your hip hop references. And Erin, where can our listeners go to continue to follow you and benefit from all of your amazing resources?
I would say the two top places would be my podcast, the Functional Nutrition Podcast. If you like the sciencey stuff, that's really where that's really what the podcast is all about. I've been podcasting for 3 years, so you have a lot of content to pick through. And then Instagram, I'm the.functional.nutritionist.
And guys, I will link all that in the show notes. So if you didn't catch it, do not worry, go check it out there. But Erin, once again, thank you so much for joining me and sharing all of your knowledge with us to help us get just one step closer to healing.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thanks for having me on the show.
To everyone listening, I'd like to invite you all to check out Erin's website. You can go to erinholthealth.com. Thank you again for joining us on the Eczema Free Journey podcast. And remember to believe, to learn, and to take massive action. I hope you have an amazing rest of your day. and I will see you on tomorrow's podcast. Thank you so much for joining me on today's episode. Don't forget to download your free guide to improve your child's eating at theeczemafreejourney.com/eat. That's theeczemafreejourney.com/eat. See you next time.